You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. Today's show is on property design. Property design. We'll look at a few aspects related to design of a property. Again, if it's whether it's a tenth of an acre in an urban lot or you've got 100 acres out in the middle of nowhere. Either way, that these principles of design are important as you're looking at your property to make it productive and sustainable. On episode two, we covered analysis. So if you have not listened to that episode, go back, listen to analysis, and that'll help prep the battlefield for design. In our contemporary affairs segment today, I want to look at the Supreme Court's recent decision, well, really indecision, that they declined to take up the appeals from five states surrounding the issue of same-sex marriage. Now, their declining of seeing this is essentially saying that the lower court decision shall stand, which was to overturn the same-sex marriage bans that are in those states. Now, this is a wide-ranging impact for sure, but what more importantly than the Supreme Court decision is what is our response as Christians? And I think there's really two responses that we need to avoid and then some thoughts on what our response should be. And the first response that we need to avoid is that temptation which makes us conform to the culture. Okay, we see that happening in evangelical America across the board, a lot of mainline denominations, etc. But what we need to be doing is holding fast to the scriptures. Okay, so in this case, we need to not conform to the culture, whether it's just the legal practice of the land doesn't mean that we conform to it, even though it is certainly cultural in our day. The other response that we want to avoid is that of siege mentality. We can't be wringing our hands and shaking our fists at the culture, because the reality is this: same-sex marriage was not the impetus of the downfall of marriage. Quite frankly, we failed in the church to uphold biblical marriage within our heterosexual marriage. And that's really what we need to remember as we approach this. And so, what is our response? Our response should be to model that of biblical marriage. We need to hold fast to the scriptures. We need to not conform to the culture, and we need to not develop this mentality like, I can't believe that, you know, they're redefining marriage, because the reality of it is that we gave up biblical marriage long ago. So it's time for us to regain that in our churches, in our families, and in our marriages. So therefore, we need to model biblical marriage, and that is how we should approach this topic. And again, it does not mean that we don't strive for and fight for the biblical definition of marriage, but we must realize that in the state that we live in our nation, that it is culturally acceptable for same-sex marriage. So again, let us model biblical marriage, that which has been instituted by God in the scriptures. There is another lesson in this, and I want to use Justice Scalia to illustrate that point. Justice Scalia saw this coming with marriage, and all the way back in 2003 with particular decisions that he said this would pave the way for these types of decisions, this type of changing moral landscape. But even in 2013, when portions of DOMA, that's the Defense of Marriage Act, was struck down, he called it jaw-dropping. And he made his kind of his famous quote, which Scalia said, "As far as this court is concerned, no one should be fooled. It is just a matter of listening and waiting for the other shoe. Well, that other shoe has definitely dropped, for sure. And the point that I'm making is this, is that Christians were really asleep at the wheel, if you will. We have missed this point. We tend to think, hey, if I can turn on a radio and I can hear Christian stations, then all must be well. Well, the point is this. We need to be vigilant, and we need to be watchful of those things that are happening around us, and we need to be proactive. So unfortunately, the vindication of Justice Scalia makes for a sad day in America with regards to marriage. As we get into our main topic today, which is property design, and again, I would encourage you to go back and listen to Property Analysis, which that's episode 2. But with regards to design, we could spend weeks and weeks and weeks on this. So I just want to really touch on a few basic aspects of property design today. And in future episodes, we'll go into more depth and breadth on particular topics. The first thing I want to talk about is water and your water plan for your property. Now, this is really important if you're looking at property, especially if you're looking at property and you want it to be productive. You really need to look at water. It really should be one of your first priorities. And so I want to talk about a few principles with regards to water. Now, the first principle is this, that we want to slow spread and soak water as much as possible. Okay, now this is obviously easier if you have a plethora of water on your property, if you've got annual streams, you've got lakes, you have significant ponds, those types of things. It's pretty easy to do. And we'll talk about that here in just a minute, but slowing, spreading, and soaking water is important. It helps hydrate the land and keeps it more productive. This is exactly the opposite of conventional thinking, which is to get the water off your property as quickly as possible. Well, this is counterintuitive to us, but it is very important. So slow, spread, and soak water as much as possible. You want to keep it on your property as long as possible. Move it across as wide an area as possible, and allow it to soak in to the land. You want to, obviously, you want to look at, does the property have a productive well on it? Are you on city water? That type of thing. Is there potential to put ponds or dams on the property? All these things will help with irrigation, with emergency water storage, with hydrating the land. With that, we can also look at rainwater collection. Okay, so again, there's many ways to collect rainwater. It's not just off our roofs, although that's a perfectly good way, especially if you have lots of storage for it, if you're using large cisterns. But there's other ways, and one of the cheapest ways is to build ponds. And again, this show is not to go into great detail on ponds, but if you can grow or if you can put in a pond, that equates to massive amounts of storage if it's any size at all. And again, it's quite useful. You want to capture ponds high on the property if you have the ability to do so. And that way you can use gravity, fed irrigation, and those types of things if at all possible. You can also install cisterns on your property. And again, if you have elevation, putting those cisterns as high as possible is good for that gravity feed. Even if you have to pump to the cisterns, which gives you that emergency water storage, that irrigation, those types of things. If you have a well, understand that you're actually not necessarily in a great position unless you have the ability to have a backup. Because the reality is this, You take somebody on city water and you take somebody on a well. If the power goes out in both places, a lot of times you're down if you're on a well immediately. The city usually will have backup generators at least, and you'll have water either through just pressure or, you know, powered backup at least for a while. It doesn't mean that I'm saying that you want to be on city water. I don't want to be on city water at all. You have to worry about what they're putting in it and those types of things. But if you're on a well, you need to immediately start thinking of a backup. So whether that's a generator, or if you're blessed with a well that you can use a hand pump as a backup, that's great. Or a solar pump for a backup. But this is also why I get back to a rainwater catchment for emergency purposes. You can catch water, and that's a great backup as well. So the power goes out, you run out of gas in your generator. Well, you have all kinds of water storage as well. So you should think in terms of primary, secondary, and tertiary means to all these types of things, especially water. But also, if you're counting on your well alone to irrigate your crops and your animals and take care of your entire household, you may be putting a great strain on it. And so we want to be wise with our water usage, collecting that water from several different sources, capturing surface water, using ponds and swales, which a swale is simply a ditch that is on contour that allows you to utilize that principle of slowing, spreading, and soaking that water. Those are all great tools to think about. You can also use micro swales, and say if you have an annual garden, and you can use micro swales to help capture some of that runoff. You might reduce your irrigation requirements, and anytime we can do that, that's great. And again, that allows for that slowing, spreading, and soaking. Okay, so that's what I want to talk about as far as water. It is of primary importance. You want to develop primary, secondary, even tertiary means of obtaining water and being able to use it. And I want to talk about energy now, energy on your property as far as development. Now, most people are tied into the grid, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with it. I think we'd all, or many of us, would love to get off the grid completely at some point, but we're just not there. I know on our property personally, we're not there. So we are on the grid. We also have propane and some other sources of energy for minor things, and I hope to build that over time, but the reality is I can't do that right now. So some of the principles for energy. Well, if we can minimize our input, as in our energy input, for the maximum output, that's a good thing. And in our culture today, especially in the United States, the way we build our homes, we build our homes based on that fundamental assumption that we will have cheap energy. And that's why we build our houses with really inadequate insulation. We design them for things like views, and we don't think about the placement of them with regards to the sun and those types of things. It's really just quite wasteful, and it's done simply because we have cheap energy. Cheap energy goes away at some point, which it is likely to do. That will change due to necessity, but unfortunately, those in the present situation will suffer for it. So these are the types of things that you need to think of when you're developing your property, whether you're building or even if you have existing structures. Well, what can you do to minimize that impact, minimize your input for the maximum output? Okay, so those are the types of things I'm talking about. You want to use sustainable sources to the max extent practical. Okay, so, and again, what I'm not talking about is that solar panels are the be-all, end-all, and that we all should be on solar. No, I don't think that's even feasible for some people. But what do I mean by sustainable sources? Well, wood for one, heating for a home, heating for water. And the important thing is there a way to stack these functions? Can you heat your home and develop some hot water at the same time? Can you heat your home and do some of your cooking at the same time? Now, this is especially works especially well in colder climates, of course. But we can also use things like solar. If you're in an area that solar is favorable, and you want to do that solar analysis to see if that is actually going to work for you, maybe you want to develop just a really small system, a system that can simply charge your radios, phones, and a few lights, that kind of thing. Just a simple backup system that's going to keep you with some of the comforts that you're used to. Because we're not about getting rid of all of the comforts or technological devices, etc. Micro hydro is for those that are blessed with property where this is a possibility, is definitely something to look into. The technology is getting better and better every year. This has great potential if you have the ability and the capacity to be able to use this. And some other things we don't think about, like gravity. Okay, again, so we go back to water for a second here. If I can store water up high on my property and have gravity to use for even my home or irrigation for the animals and crops, that's a great thing. Because guess what? I have very little input required for a very good output, as opposed to pumping from a well, or you're paying for it through city water, etc. So we look at energy in that manner. So we look at wood. You know, do we have a really efficient wood stove, or even better, can you utilize a rocket mass heater in a particular manner to provide heat? Can you use something in between, a wood stove that also heats water, something like that? You're stacking these functions. You're getting the maximum output for the minimum input. So yes, you're using wood, hopefully in a sustainable manner, which can be done, and you're using it to get the maximum output. You also can use things like the simplest way to save money on energy is to simply reduce your demand. Okay, that is the cheapest and the simplest and the most effective way, is to simply reduce your demand. Okay, so we need to do a whole show on that alone, but that is a great way to start. If you can do nothing else, you can reduce your demand. And so therefore you're getting more output from that energy. The other possibility is that we have engineered efficiency improvements. Okay, these are things like using a particular lighting, types of insulation, and using something like automatic shutoffs, things like that. So they're engineered solutions that help reduce our demand. Then we can use on-site renewables, low-cost energy solutions like we've been talking about, whether that's wood, whether that's using solar panels or wind. One of the things that we are going to explore on our homestead on Sovereign Sunrise Permafarm is a windmill, and that's a windmill to pump water. I've been fascinated with this over time. These have been used for over 1,000 years, so I definitely plan on doing a project, if nothing else, just to do a demonstration that a windmill is great for pumping water. Things like this that again, cheap energy has gotten us away from all of these types of solutions that are very simple. Now I want to talk about waste. So we've hit water and energy, and I'll talk about waste. Well, there's a lot of aspects to this, and probably just some simple principles is that all food scraps should be used. Okay, so whether we're being smart about how we're using our food, how we're utilizing leftovers and things like that. But also, what else can we do with those scraps? I tell you what, having a small, even just a small flock of chickens can utilize almost all of your food scraps. Now, there's certain things that chickens shouldn't eat, and we'll do a show on that someday. But for the most part, they can take care of all your scraps. They provide so many different functions. As a byproduct, you can get eggs or meat, or you can get them to clean up your garden. You can get them to spread fertilizer. They scratch up the ground. They do a little bit of micro tilling for you. There's so many functions that they provide. It would be great if almost all families had at least a very small flock of chickens, take care of their food scraps, and provide some of those other functions for you. All organic material from gardens and orchards can be used for mulch. And you know what we tend to do? We all in the fall, which the leaves are starting to turn now, they all fall down, and what do? We rake them all up and we get them off our property as quickly as possible. This is exactly the opposite of what we do. If you take a look at a forest with all that cover on the forest, it stays there. It provides mulch. It's why you can walk in a forest and it feels bouncy and it's moist in there, and everything is growing well, and it doesn't require pruning, raking, or trimming. Okay, so I'm not saying that you can't prune or trim or make certain areas of your yard neat, but we could learn a lot from this, and we can use all that extra organic material for mulch around our trees, around in our gardens, and that type of thing. So it's something to think about. You need to change your thinking with regards to this. If nothing else, it can all be composted and be turned into some soil that'll be beneficial to your gardens. All excess animal manure should also be composted if you have animals. Like I said, if you manage your chickens correctly, they can drop fertilizer, and you really don't have to deal with chicken waste per se, because they're dropping it in beneficial places. They're dropping it where you want to drop it. Whether you're moving them in a paddock shift method or free grazing or doing a victory garden where you're moving them deliberately, and they're basically your compost machines. I mean, there's many ways to do this. And then the next topic, which is controversial, is humanure. So what do we do with our human waste? Well, we flush it down the toilet. We use anywhere from 2 to 7 gallons of potable fresh water every time. And it is a huge resource that is wasted. Yes, I said resource. Many places in the world, they and it's called night soil. And again, depending on your level of comfort, night soil can just be used around ornamental, you know, after it's been composted for a year at least. Some people will say 2 years. We will be implementing that here on this, on our homestead. We'll be composting it for 2 years just to be safe. And it can be used just on your ornamentals or anything else. Now, many people will say you can use them in your orchards and even in your gardens. Now, that's, you know, I leave that up to you to do the research. The reality is there's nothing after 2 years. That is nothing but soil. That's all it is. It has no resemblance to human waste at that point. But I would leave that up to you to decide. But if nothing else, having a composting toilet, a simple composting toilet that you use wood chips or anything like that to cover the smell or anything, and it doesn't smell if you use that. Now, if you're just going in a bucket in a plastic bag, yes, it's going to stink. And to be honest with you, I don't even like the powered composting toilets or the incinerators, all those kinds of things. A very simple composting toilet where you cover it with wood chips. You take it out every couple days. You put it into a compost pile by itself. You add green material to it occasionally and let it just compost for over a long period of time and it becomes soil. This is a very simple way. It can also just be, if you're not comfortable with that, it can be simply a backup. It's a secondary source of being able to deal with human waste in a very clean and hygienic manner. So if the grid goes down, if you lose power for any length of time, you lose water and you don't have the ability to flush, well, you got to deal with that waste. And I tell you what, we don't think about that. And that becomes a huge, huge problem. Now, this is a very simple way to deal with that very cleanly and very cheaply, requires nothing. Okay, so again, very little inputs required for a very good solution, so a good output for that. Now, there's other things, other features that you can talk about on design, and again, we could spend weeks on this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to stop right there. So we just looked at some real basic aspects of design. We looked at water and energy and waste, and we'll stop there. So I'm going to thank you again for listening to us, and I want to share with you the verse of the day, and actually it's a couple of verses, and our verse for today is Ephesians 1, verses 3 through 5, and it says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us in Christ with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places, even as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and blameless before him. In love, he predestined us for adoption as sons through Jesus Christ, according to the purpose of his will." Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.